I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. On this week's Clash Podders In Control episode, in the red corner, we're going back to the heady 90s and the Farrelly Brothers' second movie. But has this film dated too much that we can no longer enjoy the gross-out escapades of Roy and Ishmael? Have the subsequent decades indeed munsoned it? From 1996, we're talking Kingpin.
Roy Munson had it all.
You're on a gravy train with biscuit wheels.
He was the golden boy of the bowling world.
Watch the door.
Want to make more money?
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?
Double or nothing, I can pick up that spare.
Take that bet.
How do you do that?
But one night...
Sometimes a bowler just has to face the music.
He lost his innocence.
And that bowler is you, Roy.
While in the blue corner, a genuine cult classic to be revered as it is by so many, or an overrated slice of stoner nonsense that doesn't deserve the plaudits so frequently bestowed upon it. We'll answer that and more as we take a little look at 1998's The Big Lebowski.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. You know, that or his dudeness or duder or, El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Are you employed, Mr. Lebowski?
Ah! Employed?
You like sex, Mr. Lebowski?
Is this your only ID?
You got the wrong guy. I'm the dude.
Your name's Lebowski, Lebowski.
So what connects these two movies and which one does it better? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken.
Hello, Clash Podders. We don't have a cow. We have a bull. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilly.
Happy New Year, both of you. Are we still saying that?
No, don't say that.
All right, fine.
This is like the fifth show of the new of January that you're
right.
Listening to.
All right. Not Happy New Year to either of you then. I hope you suffer greatly. So our month of listener suggestions. Sorry, I was off last week, by the way. I'll just do that quick apology now.
No problem.
How
no
was
worries.
It? Good. All right.
You haven't listened to it.
I know I haven't listened
Social
to
network's
it.
Out.
I know, but I'm still saying how was it? You can tell me how good it was without me needing to listen to it.
Sure.
Good.
Yeah.
Great.
Two-thirds of a good show.
Well, we're all caught up. So our month of listener suggestions, a.k.a. Clash Putters in Control, continues. Answer me this one thing.
Mm-hmm. Was I know it, what you're going to say.
Oh, you know what I'm going to say. Was it called Clash Putters in Control
no,
last week?
It no, it wasn't, because that's not its name.
No,
Fanjan.
No, it's moved on to Fanuary.
Which I didn't like at first, and then I know I do like.
It's not good.
It and is
it's
good.
Not, it's not staying. Clash Putters in Control. So if you have a suggestion for a pairing, you can still email us. Am I right, Chris?
Yeah.
You can still email us at show@clashpod.com and give us a reason for you, why you want a particular pairing on the show. So who did today's pairing come from, Chris?
Not one, not two, but three people suggested
what?
This pairing.
Christopher McCowan, Mark Fadden, and Kieran Murray. And Kieran was nice enough to send us a reason as well.
Excellent.
He said the obvious link is bowling. He's helped us out with the links.
Right.
I'll add both films are directed by brothers. Correct.
Oh, yeah.
And both feature memorable and iconic characters that have stuck with me. Combined, I've watched these movies around 15 times and could rewatch with pleasure.
Oof. That's nice. That's good. Lovely. Good. Lovely reasoning. Lovely reasoning. So I was away last week, but I believe, because these were my clues to give, but you gave a clue in my absence, Victoria. What was it?
It was... it was...
Oh, good.
Oh, God, here we go.
Yep.
Bowl him, mushy, bowl him. Bowl him, mushy, bowl him.
So what?
That's, I don't know, that's what you said.
That is what I said, because that's what it is.
I think you said bowling, dude, bowling.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Well, it might have sounded like that.
Right,
but I didn't.
That one I get. Chris's I get. What was yours again? So, say
bowl
really...
him, mushy, bowl him, but said in a particular with a particular cadence.
Right. Which I put it out to the listeners,
right,
as well, if they understood the reference you were making beyond the films.
Right.
Nothing came back.
Well, that's fine.
What is the reference?
I mean, right, so I don't watch cricket because it is boring,
right?
But Mark watches cricket.
Mm.
And then for years and years in our house, you know, when he would say, mutter to himself, bowling mushy, when something went well, bowling mushy. And then one day I said, what does that mean? And he said, oh, there's a bowler called Mushtaq, and that's why I say that. And so because you rang in sick with about 30 seconds to go the other week, and then Chris was like, come up with a clue, that's the only thing I could think of. But now I can see it's rubbish because the clue.
Well, everyone got it.
What has it got to do with bowling?
Wait, because you say bowl him and that's it.
But it's about cricket.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's throwing you off the scent.
Look, everyone got it, so yes. It worked.
I mean, yeah. It did. It did.
I've got a better one.
Excellent.
Stay in your lane, man. That's a better one.
Yeah, turkeys, pins, gutters, strikes. There were lots of ways you could have gone.
Yeah. A lot of ways. But that was nice.
Yeah, but you know, like in a normal job, if you ring in sick less than 24 hours, you get fired.
How are you? Because you did a bad clue. I didn't even think it was that bad. I just wanted to understand
you.
It.
Okay, thank
so
you.
Stop having a go. I was really, really tired.
Did you do that thing where you were hanging upside down off the bed? That's what I used to do when I rang in sick. To make
does
yourself
that work?
Sound. Yeah. Well, yeah, it did work. I mean, I don't know if I was ever believed, but I got away with it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good tip.
Thank you.
So, Chris, you followed that clue up on Twitter with?
Something about strikes.
Excellent.
Going on strike. Strike it. Like, I don't know. Something about strikes.
Fine. Half-arsing it already.
It didn't matter. Yeah. Everyone had got it before I put the clue up.
Lovely. So we're on Twitter at ClashPod, also Instagram at ClashPod, and the guesses came rolling down the aisles, and while some ended up in the gutter, we did have some strikes. Robert Farley, Callum, Tim Wilkins, Rhys Page, Peter White, and Ed Holt all got the right answer. Also, Ed Holt started snooping around his Twitter page. Takes amazing pictures of space.
Really?
His garden, yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
I know.
I love stuff like that.
Yeah. It's great. I was looking through all his photos and I was like, I don't even understand.
Is this all right to say this? I don't know.
But Twitter's public.
It's a public forum. Yeah.
Sorry, because I just don't know the rules.
He wants people to look at his photos.
Oh, okay.
He was a new follower and I thought, oh, he's just joined the Clash Podders party.
Let's make sure he's not too weird. Is he going to chuck abuse at us for the next 6 months?
Oh, I see. No, fair enough.
One of those?
Also, let's single him out. He's new. I'm championing his photo. I didn't know how amazing the photos you could take of space were from your back garden with a high power camera and all the right equipment.
Does he live, without giving anything away, does he live in a crowded urban centre?
He says on his Twitter profile, so I can repeat this, he lives in Sussex, I believe.
Great, okay.
This has got weird. I don't know why, because it's all out there and yet me repeating it has made it weirder.
Ed, do you fancy going for a pint sometimes?
Yeah, show us your telescope. What?
Come on. Now it's weird. He's married. I know that too.
Come on. Let's move on.
All right. Anyway, Ed didn't win, but welcome to the party, Ed. The winner is Camillo, who is the first correct guest. Congratulations, Camillo. Your prize is a night out bowling with the three of us. We'll be heading to Finsbury Park's Ball Smacker Lanes, after which we'll go bowling.
Very good.
I've been there.
Right then, the connection section. He did a lot of them, didn't he?
Kieran said bowling and directed by brothers, although one of them isn't credited that way. The Coen brothers aren't credited as directing together, even though they do.
Yep, that's correct. They had to get a special letter from the DGA, didn't they, that allowed them...
Well, they edit as well. They edit their own films with a made-up name.
Yeah, they got nominated for an Oscar and had to confess.
Really?
Mm.
Okay.
Ronald James, is it? Ronald?
So aside from the bowling, I think there is a similar theme in both films, which is misfits from the fringes of society who need each other more than they'd care to admit and bond over bowling.
Yeah, like being friends with someone who's your total opposite.
Yeah.
Late Rent.
Good. Late rent and having to do things that you probably wouldn't really want to do to make up for the late rent. Having sex with your landlady and going to see interpretive dance.
I think the dude doesn't mind that.
Yeah, he doesn't. I think that's me. I would mind.
We wouldn't want to go.
I wouldn't want to go.
Foundations, mentoring kids as part of a foundation.
Very much so.
The Little Lebowski Achievers and the Unified Fund.
Ridiculously dressed bowling nemesises, Big Urn and Jesus.
I think Urn dresses quite well.
I thought you might. I actually could see you in that. I imagine that if you'd ever taken bowling, are you wearing a bowling shirt?
I am.
The Bowski bowling shirt. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I imagine that you would have a rose encrusted inside a bowling ball.
Yeah, I used to have man ball.
Do you actually bowl?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, not for a while, but I used to bowl.
Oh my God, you should come round. I've got Wii bowling.
Let's do it.
Yeah, it's great. It's very realistic. Very realistic. Okay, costume designer Mary Zofras worked on both Kingpin and The Big Lebowski.
Oh, that's a good spot.
Yeah, well done. I don't have anything else.
Yeah, let's move on. Come on.
Bowlers Who Smoke Weed, and I'm going to give it a mention, fucking killer soundtracks to both movies. Kingpin wins it for me, though. Disco Inferno, I Want Candy, and the ska punk band Goldfinger on the Kingpin soundtrack,
who
I once saw at the Brixton Academy, who did one of the greatest live performances of a song ever. They covered Nina's 99 Red Balloons in a ska punk fashion, and it blew my tiny mind.
I should have known you'd like this sound. Because the Farrelly brothers really go in for that middle of the road punk pop nonsense. Yeah.
It's all very upbeat, all very happy. Happy songs, happy songs.
Very Smash Mouth, which is your thing.
Yeah, there you go. Hey now, no star. So on Thursday, Victoria goes big on Lebowski, which means today, Chris is the Clash Pod Kingpin. Chris, take us on a journey.
In a nod to The Hustler, a con artist gets his hand mangled by some angry marks. In a nod to The Graduate, he has sex with an older woman. In a nod to Witness, he stays with the Amish and raises a barn. In a nod to The Last Detail, he goes cross-country with Randy Craig. In a nod to The Colour of Money, he teaches his travelling buddy how to cop. In a nod to Dumb and Dumber, there's a fight with a guy in a bar, though this time he's called Skidmark rather than Seabass. In a nod to Indecent Proposal, Woody Harrelson sells his partner's privates for $1 million. In a nod to Nothing, our hero actually loses the big climactic game, and Kingpin stops being a spoof just as the credits roll.
Rocky, innit? Isn't that Rocky? Like losing the final big match? Isn't that
I guess so.
A nod to? I thought that. But yeah.
I didn't think they were referencing Rocky.
No, I didn't.
In this film.
It reminded me, because I sort of expected him to win. But anyway.
When did you first see Kingpin, Alex?
I've only ever seen half of this movie for some reason. And it's not something that I do regularly. I've only ever seen not even half, like the start or the end. I've seen the middle section. I don't know why, but this was...
So you've only seen the bits without Bill Murray. You've kind of screwed yourself out of some laughs there.
Which is why it was such a treat this week. It was a nice surprise. So I'm going to call this a first watch. I will say this applies to... It's parody, though, because this applies to both movies this week. I've never seen either of these movies in entirety, but I have seen bits of both of them.
Okay.
Vicky?
I don't remember. I've seen it once. I think I was a student. I just don't really remember. That's it. Nothing illuminating there.
Yep. I will say I thought I'd seen it because on the way to school, on the school bus in Leeds, the number 4 bus went through Winmore in Leeds. And in 1996, there was a huge billboard of this movie poster advertising Kingpin. And what would happen was there was a lot of noise on the bus and then a lot of silence. A lot of kids going, it's coming up, it's coming up, it's coming up, it's coming up. Because anyone who's seen the poster for this movie, it was Vanessa Angel in that red satin outfit, which if you're a teenage boy on a school bus, means go quiet and look at the billboard.
I was more excited about seeing Bill Murray.
That says everything about you in one sentence.
I went to see the cinema because I was very excited because at the time, I believed Dumb and Dumber to be the greatest film ever. And so the fact that they were doing a follow-up starring Bill Murray... I was into it. So I went to the cinema, thought it was funny, and then it was kind of on heavy rotation when I was at uni as well, especially the Bill Murray scenes. We watched them a lot when I was a student. So, yes, I've seen this many, many times, but equally, it's a film I then stopped watching and so haven't seen for 20 years.
Did you have a bit of a crush on Vanessa Angel?
Obviously.
Okay, fine. I had a crush on her. I didn't realise, but I had a crush on her from Spies Like Us in 1985. She plays the Russian soldier who Dan Aykroyd gets together with at the end of that movie.
Oh.
Yes. Lovely stuff.
Lovely.
Right, let's talk about a bit of background, but there's not a huge amount for this one. The Farrelly brothers, coming off the back of Dumb and Dumber, read a script, and it was written by the writers and producers of The Golden Girls, Mort Nathan and Barry Fenaro. They loved it and they rewrote it. So Bobby Farrelly said, we did an extensive rewrite. We thought that
they loved it so much, they wrote all over it.
Well, I was going to say, you sort of look at the credits that these two writers have afterwards and you go, I mean, either this was just like everything came together, it was lightning in a bottle, or the Farrellys did quite a big rewrite on it. They've done between them Boat Trip, Van Wilder 2, The Rise of Taj, Men in Black 2, and I now pronounce you Chuck and Larry.
Oh, lovely. Mm.
But they wrote a bunch of Golden Girls episodes.
They did.
I fell down a Golden Girls hole this week. Oh.
That's disrespectful.
Oh.
Stop making that noise.
Back to Kingpin. So Bobby Farrelly said, we thought that it was just joke after joke with no heart at all. It would be tiresome. So we did purposely try to put in a bit more heart than, say, we did in Dumb and Dumber. I mean, those guys were almost too dumb to have the kind of heart that Roy Munson had with his dad. And I think it was important in telling the story. And his brother says, this one's much more sophisticated. There were opportunities to throw in a few fart and shit type gags, but we thought that was Dumb and Dumber. This is more of a puke movie. We feel that we're growing.
They are very funny about their own work like
yes.
that, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yes. I couldn't get hold of the commentary of this because apparently they literally go through each joke saying which ones worked and which ones didn't sort of 10 years later. Because it's about 50-50, I would say.
I disagree. Split. I disagree. I think it's at least 70-30, if not 80-20. But we'll go through them. I've written down every joke that I think works in my notes. And I'll read them out as I always do when we do a comedy on this show. I read
That's
out the
what
joke.
I was really worried about today is Kingpin, because Big Lebowski is other stuff, but here you could just go one liner. Is that what you're going to do?
We will be doing that, yes.
Fantastic. Fast Company magazine did an interview with the guys a few years ago, looking back at the film on its 20th anniversary. And so I've got some bits and pieces from that. Michael Keaton, they wanted for the Woody Harrelson role. Mm. When he dropped out, they went for Woody. Chris Farley wanted to play the Amish guy, Ishmael. Mm. That's who they wanted, but he was locked into doing Black Sheep.
Seen it?
Yeah.
Not good.
Not good. Not good. Should have done this.
Should have done this.
Although I don't think he would have been as good as Randy Quaid, as Ishmael.
Interesting. I'm not massively a fan of Randy Quaid as Ishmael. I don't mind him, but I do think there was more that could have been done with that character.
Do you know who could have played Ishmael really well? Is Woody Harrelson. Because he basically played him on Cheers.
Yeah, yeah.
Same bloke, basically.
Wait, so let's work this through. So if Woody Harrelson's Ishmael, Michael Keaton as Roy, that works.
Fine.
Yeah,
Michael Keaton works in anything. Mm. And then Peter said, we had a lot of people pass on the Big Earn role, but they wanted Bill Murray, and Randy Quaid had just made Quick Change with Bill Murray, a film that we should do, actually. A very funny film. And so Randy Quaid phoned him, told him where to show up, and he said yes. But the Farrellys were understandably worried that Bill Murray would not show up. So 7 o'clock on the day he was supposed to arrive, they were shooting that night. They didn't know if he'd come or not. They didn't know if they had a movie or not. And he came walking in. Bobby Farrelly says, Ernie was a great idea on paper, but he didn't really have the lines until Bill showed up. Bill had nothing to work with. It was kind of a thankless role as written, and he turned it into a beautiful character. Bobby says, we gave Bill the sides in the morning, the dialogue of what we're supposed to read that day, and he'd take a look at it like, why are you giving me this? And he'd just crumple it up and throw it in the trash. He'd go, let me run with it, and it was better than what we wrote.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
And you can tell.
And they actually go into details about the ones that he did come up with. So we'll talk about them when we talk about the movie, which is now, unless anyone's got anything else.
No, not really. Did all right at the box office, but not a patch on Dumb and Dumber.
No.
It was what, $32 million at the box office on a $25 million budget.
Yep. And there are reasons for that, which I will get to.
Lovely.
So the movie, we start off with kind of a flashback. Roy Munson, when he's a kid, an accident-prone kid.
First laugh when that kid trips through that fence. I'm already sold.
Which gets a callback later in the film as well. But he's living this kind of idyllic life with his dad. They kind of set up that they're going to play catch in the back. Yard, but it's tenpin bowling they're going to be doing, and he's learning these life lessons through bowling. He's becoming this decent, moral, good man through the lessons his dad's teaching him, and that's how Roy is set up.
Yeah, he's great. I like the guy who plays his dad. I couldn't find him, but he's very good.
Big guy.
Hmm.
Then we cut to 1979 to a section I'm calling Munson Erna.
How good?
Munson Burner, Munson Erna. It doesn't really work.
Is it a science film?
What?
No.
Oh, I see now, yeah.
Munson Erna.
No, I get it. Don't do it again. It's what an opening, though. You see, I think, like, as far as Farrelly Brothers sort of as directors go, Green Book, let's put that to one side at the moment, look at the comedies. Mm. Like, I think this is it's like fucking Boogie Nights.
It is exactly it's like Boogie Nights.
It's like P.T. Anderson vis-a-vis like Martin Scorsese. You're sure. Like, wow.
It is really good.
What an opening. Yeah. I don't remember you being like directors like this.
Yeah, for sure.
He's a disco bowler, dancing to Disco Inferno. He's worshipping his right hand. Our man Roy is joining the professional bowling tour. Because the name Munson is going to mean winner. And he's at the Oda Eaters Invitational. And he's facing off against Ernie McCracken, played by Bill Murray, who is doing his own commentary on the game, trying to put his opponent off. And it's a Bill Murray performance, isn't it? It's very much...
Yeah, it's Bill Murray doing what he did incredibly well, which is say the most repugnant things, but be unbelievably charming at the same time.
It's weird, yeah.
It's so good. Like, I mean, well, I don't want to go ahead because I'm going to do a bit about this in the bits, but genuinely, I'll say this now. I don't think you could have anyone else play that role. At this point in time, I can't think anyone else who could get away with what that character is and still imbue them with a level of depth that you're actually interested in. They're not just a Shooter McGavin from Happy Gilmore. They're not just a sort of comedy villain. They're a rounded character with depth. Like, you can imagine a backstory to him. Mm. He's fantastic in this.
So Munson wins the game, but his car breaks down because someone put sugar in the tank. And Big Ern just happens to be there.
What, did I wake you, Fatima? I mean, again, not a funny joke. His delivery makes a not funny, questionable joke funny.
Yeah.
Well, you did question at the start, is it outdated?
Mm.
Is it outdated, do you think?
I mean, the thing with that joke in particular, and I think a lot of what Big Ern says...
That's what that character would say.
Is what that character would say. And so for that reason, then no, it's not really dated. I think some of the humour outside of Big Ern is dated, and we'll come to that when we get to it. Mm. But I think as far as him saying jokes that you sort of go, ooh, that's questionable... You go, well, but that's his character. Big Ern would say that, regardless of what time of it is.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah, no, I do agree. I'm just thinking it through, that's all. It's just because it's an old film, and he has Bill Murray as a person. Like, so in that scene in the diner, when and it is very funny, where he says to the group of ladies, you, and someone looks and he's like, not you. Not you. I was laughing my head off. If you made that film today and you had a male actor say that, would you like, oh, what, like that's not, it's not very good.
But I would piss myself.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't
it's
it?
Funny.
But it's because you know how much I love Bill Murray. I'm just like, ha, 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 brilliant. Mm. You make someone else do it, I'd be like, what a douche. So.
And that's it. But I don't think it's to do with, I don't think it's to do with the time. I think if you did do that joke now and Bill Murray did it now in a movie set in 2022, it would still be funny.
Yeah.
And the diner scene, this is Bobby Farrelly, when he looks over at those girls, those were just extras sitting behind him. he looks over at the end of the scene and we'd learned by then, don't cut, just let him roll because you never know what he's going to do.
It's because he's not, is it because he's not good looking? Like, he isn't, he's an interesting looking character face, but he's not like super handsome. So because if you're super handsome and you have that privilege of being handsome and you take the piss out of a woman like that, That's too negative kind of thing. Like, you'd recoil. Yeah. But because he is an interesting face, it kind of levels the playing
field. Why we don't like, it's why we don't like handsome comedians.
Yes.
And it's also a little bit like he does it knowing. It's almost like it's so clever. He does it knowing he's a character in a movie. Like, you almost, he's doing it for the audience. So you go, oh my God, Bill, you didn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, it sort of transcends the film in a weird way.
Okay.
I think it's great. I will say, though, in that diner scene, Woody Harrelson, I think he must have gone, look, this is Bill Murray.
Doing his thing, yeah.
There's no way of competing with him on his level, so I'm just going to talk with my mouth full and eat yellow gloop for this entire scene and somehow almost steals it from Bill Murray.
Checking the script under the table to make sure he fucks off soon.
Well, he's about to be sent outside to eat. As is a waitress sent away to wash off her perfume.
Also a waitress told, he goes, Tanqueray and Tab. Keep them coming. I've got a long drive ahead.
I hadn't even noticed that.
Yeah,
it's great. Funny.
I've got that one.
Oh, do you remember Tab Clear? God,
yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah, do you remember Tab Clear?
Lasted about 2 years in the UK.
I don't know why, because I was really pushing it hard.
Fuck, I love that stuff. Yeah. It was absolutely great.
Yep.
Clear cola.
Mm.
So
that's what it was.
That's literally what it was.
Thank you for that.
Clear cola. They still make
it. They didn't call it clear cola.
We need a sponsor.
And that's the trivia section ended for today. So Roy needs a supplemental income. So Ernie convinces him to do a con. They pretend to be dictionary salesmen who are drunk. But it doesn't go well. A fake priest realised he's being conned. And they get, they turn the corner. They're there. Ernie pretends to get out with Roy to face the music. And then he drives away. They see Roy's state champion ring and they break his hand in a bowling machine, like when Fast Eddie gets his thumbs broken in The Hustler.
They don't break his hand. They basically chop his hand up, hence the cut to the wood chipper, which is weird, seeing as we're doing it with The Big Lebowski. And in 1996, Fargo used a wood chipper to chop up Steve Buscemi.
Indeed.
Right. So, yeah, it does have a great line before he gets his hand chopped off when he's bowling and he goes, "The name's not Boy, it's Roy." It's fucking so simple. It's so good.
That's very funny.
Apparently, Woody Harrelson was so bad at bowling that they had to hire in people just to show him how to stand with the ball because he was really bad. Bill Murray can bowl, but Woody Harrelson, no bowl.
So we cut to 1996 and a section I'm calling Amish Impossible. Amish Impossible. Amish and Impossible.
Perfect.
Just before we do Our Mission Possible. Don't you think that hand in the bowling machine scene is pretty fucking extreme for a comedy?
I think there's a few things, because this is a 12, and so the bull joke, and that's not for 12-year-olds, I don't think.
Yes,
and
it is.
I don't know.
You've never been a 12-year-old boy. That is hilarious.
It's also for a 42-year-old man.
a man wanks off a bull.
He drinks the semen.
If you're 12 years old, that is brilliant.
Really?
I don't understand why you...
I just thought maybe 15, that's all.
No, it's no.
I just get the chills every time I think
about it. Trust me, at 12 you get that gag and it's brilliant.
Great.
Yeah, but the Woody Harrelson's face, and his hand is going to that machine.
He's doing some acting.
I mean, Nettie said to me, she was like, I watched this, she would have been 10, I think, when she saw it at the cinema, and she said it scared the shit out of her, that scene.
What did you think of the bull scene?
Too young. She loved it. She said, 10 years old, 8 years old. I wish I'd seen it earlier.
So we're in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Roy's lost his hair. He's got a beer belly and he has a hook for a hand or a rubber hand. I think it's a missed opportunity. I don't find many of the rubber hand jokes.
Incorrect.
When you could be doing a bit of an Inspector Gadget thing here.
That's
I think there
point,
could be fun things going on the end there rather than this same joke over and over again.
Good point.
Isn't that the joke from Inner Space where Mr. Igor puts the vibrator?
Yes.
Get his
vibrator.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I disagree. I think there is one thing that the Farrellys do too much in this, which I'll point out as we go through, but there are moments where they just push a joke a bit too far, and you know I'm a fan of that. Mm. But even for me, it's like, oh, like the bit where he's adjusting the rearview mirror, then he pulls it off in his hook, and then he tries to close the door and he pulls off the door handle, and the joke keeps building. But then the ripping of the suit jacket when he puts it on, just like you've killed the joke then.
Yeah.
So he's a travelling bowling salesman of some kind, selling condoms, amongst other things.
How do we get him into a bowling alley now that he's stopped bowling?
He sells condoms.
It's a specific job. But he hears some magic on the bowling alley, and that is Amish man Ishmael, played by Randy Quaid, who's averaging 270, apparently. And he wants to manage him, but Ish is not interested. But Roy is desperate because he owes rent to landlady Mrs. Dumas. He saves Mrs. Dumas from a thief.
Mm.
We have a screenwriting Save the Cat moment that a character does.
Yes.
He's using the Save the Cat in his own life.
Why are you so highly like that?
But it's not a cat.
No, it's a Save the Cat moment where he's saving a woman.
Yeah.
But he's faking it like you would in a script.
Okay.
He's written the Save the Cat moment himself.
Right. Sorry,
to make himself look like a good guy.
It just took me a moment. God, I was off last week. Give me a break. Yeah.
But
Lynn Shay is so up for this. She's so game. Apparently, she turned up to the audition like in the costume that she ends up wearing in the film. It's her costume that she came to the audition in, and she was damn up for it.
I would say she gives it weirdly some dignity, to be honest, because I don't think it's funny. It's like women are gross. Ha ha ha. But she goes so into it, like you say, that it's fine. It pulls it back.
I'm weirdly, I'm the opposite. This is one of the.
That's not weird to me that you would say that.
Really?
No, I think you think this is the funniest thing you've ever
seen. No, I'm further away. I don't think this works for me.
Okay.
I think it's a bit much, and yeah. I think it's just. Whereas a lot of the other gross out stuff sort of fits with the story, this is just there to go, ugh, yeah. She's got varicose veins. Yeah. You had sex with her.
Yeah, but I guess they're taking the graduate image, aren't they, of seeing him through the leg, and it's just a variation on that. I like the line, what is it about good sex that makes me want to crap?
Nope.
You really jarred something loose, Tiger.
That's funny.
I know. It was too much. It's so gross. I'm not great with scat.
This movie nearly got an R rating for that scene. The MPAA were not happy. They had to go back and forth with it because... it's the cow scene. Sorry, I was just getting to it.
See, I told you.
You know, Paul Simon saw a cut of the movie with the Sound of Silence playing in that scene, and he personally went, you can absolutely use my song. He fucking loved it. Which makes me happy that Paul Simon saw that and went, bloody funny.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you like when she does that thing with her tongue?
No, I don't. I do think because she's such a horror stalwart, it's funny that she's sort of playing a kind of horror character in this.
Mm. So there is a $1 million Reno tournament coming up. So Roy heads into Amish country and he pretends to be Irish, I think.
Yeah.
For a bit. It doesn't last long, the accent. Yeah. And
he's so good. Woody Harrelson. Oh, this is when I realised just how good he is in this film. When they're having the dinner scene and he's distracted by the dog trying to pull off his rubber hand. Mm. And the old Amish guy goes, how many children do you have, Brother Eskil? And he goes, none that I know of. And then he's like, what I meant to say was, well, I'm unable to have children. Nasty. And then you see him pause and go, and he's thinking of something Amish that he might have had an accident in that prevented him having children. Obviously, they don't use electricity. So he goes, that's the cheese grating accident.
Yeah.
Lovely. Lovely that he pauses while you see him sort of work out that he's in an Amish community and what might have damaged him.
I missed that.
Okay.
And I think...
I'm glad you spotted him, okay. But I missed it.
In terms of the bull milking scene, I think, forgive me if I'm wrong, the line... that they had to take out was, it took me a while to get her warmed up, then pow, all at once.
Yeah.
I think that's the line they had to remove.
Okay.
To stop it getting an R rating, which is strange, I think. The MPAA is messed up, really.
It's back in the one that I saw.
I saw him say, it took a while to get her going.
Yeah. So, and then we have the barn raising, which is a very specific spoof of a film from 12 years previous, isn't it? I don't know if that's dated, but it's quite funny. But if you haven't seen Witness, I'm not sure...
You just assume that's all Amish people do all day, every day, is just build a new barn because that's all you ever see them do in films.
So
he chops off Buttercup's hooves entirely, which isn't a great gag, but credit to the Farrellys, because it's quite nasty, the idea of cutting off a horse's actual feet.
Yep.
But they do bother with a nasty gag like that to come back to a sequence later where you see a shorter Buttercup, which is quite nice. Softens it.
It's round three holes and you stick your fingers in it. You keep Rebecca out of this. Is that good?
I mean.
Yep. Let's take a break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This week, Clive Anderson is joined by comedian Stephen K. Amos on My Seven Wonders, the show where guests select their personal seven wonders of the world. Stephen discusses his fame down under, who inspires his comedy, and how he got on during lockdown.
My dad, early 80s, came to stay with me for 2 weeks of the lockdown. I had no idea, after all these years, that he is a twat. I had no idea, Clive, that the heating in my house could be set to lava. And I said to him, why is the heating on so high? And without skipping a beat, he just said, I don't pay the bill here. Now, this is it's the kind of thing I have to deal with.
Listen to My Seven Wonders with Clive Anderson on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with the boys going on a mission because this is the road movie portion of the film, and Ishmael must not allow himself to be corrupted. We've got a man with no morals and a man with all the morals, but he soon starts going off the rails. It starts with a cigarette.
That's funny.
It's so, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then some coffee.
Yeah.
And then as the film progresses, it gets worse and worse. Roy pretty quickly realises that Ishmael has been lying about his bowling score because the Amish do everything 50% more. So his 270 was from 15 frames, not 10. And this is when Roy learns that Munsoned now means having the world in the palm of your hands and blowing it.
Don't you think that's great that he never... The reaction to that is always just a look on his face. He never actually sort of verbalises, like, where did that come from or anything. I think it's a really nice amount of restraint, considering the rest of this movie, on behalf of the Farrellys there, to just have it be his face going,
yep. And if you like screenwriting, 10 minutes ago, Randy Quaid has refused the call, but been convinced to do it. And then 5 minutes ago, Woody Harrelson's refused the call. So we've got two in 10 minutes. But they agree to go on the road together, and we get a training montage of them bowling blind, bowling ball in balls. And there's a lot of montages in this film.
Yeah.
Can you have too many montages?
Oh, I love a montage.
Yeah, I love a montage as well, especially set to ska punk.
Yeah.
They're doing the con themselves, and they end up at Stan's big house for a big money game. And that's where they meet Claudia, played by Vanessa Angel. And we quickly get a nipple joke at the bar.
Quite a
few,
yeah.
This doesn't work. I really think this is a really scrappy scene. When you consider how good the Farrellys are, she gets her nipples aroused to distract Ishmael.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he's impervious to having her nipples distract him.
Yep.
But it falls flat because the Farrellys, I think, want their cake and eat it.
Don't fall flat. Sticks up.
They stick right up.
Because she does that, and then for it to show that Ishmael isn't affected by it, he needs to make that strike very quickly after her nipples are aroused. But they want to do the Ishmael joke as well. So she does her bit, then he goes and he gets his nipples, massive nipples, erect. And by that point, you're distracted from the original idea of him being
bowling
impervious.
Yeah.
At which point he then bowls and you're like, oh, right. And you sort of, it's trying to catch up with itself.
Yeah.
It's a bit scrappy.
They think that boobs are funny. And so that's why they do it twice. And they're not that funny. They're just not.
I don't know.
Isn't it because he's got
tits on a man?
But he's not got big breasts. He's got big nips.
Yeah, they think the nipples are the funniest part of the boob, and that's why they do it twice.
I don't know. Again, Woody Harrelson is their saviour here because he makes what would be like quite a crass visual gag funny with, I'll take a couple of jugs, mugs, a bottle.
They make their escape with Claudia, and she wants to become a business partner. And so she stakes $500 on the guys. As I said, there's that fight in the bar, which is so similar to Dumb and Dumber.
It's instead of being Seabass, he's called Skidmark. I mean, they've not even tried to change the name that much.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of this that is similar to Dumb and Dumber, I think. They did take the basics of that storyline and sort of put this on top of it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that the scene, you know who that is playing on stage, by the way? Jonathan Richman is the guy playing in that bar diner they go to. That's the guy who's the leader of the band that narrates There's Something About Mary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Thanks. It's all right. I did like the bit where they're in the car after the fight because Woody Harrelson punches Skidmark so that they don't beat up poor old Ishmael. And he goes, well, what was I going to do? You know, they would have torn him apart, the bunch of animals. And Claudia goes, yeah, but you didn't have to have a beer with them afterwards. Funny.
He really is repeating all the jokes, isn't
he? Yeah, he is.
Okay, cool. I told you I was going to do it. As long as you're aware, I'm self-aware enough to know that I was going to do it.
That's always your excuse for everything.
All right, I'll stop now.
No, no, don't, because sometimes it gets a laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like you said, it's literally 50-50.
And
it's
you know why? It's not your laugh. Yeah. That's the thing.
It's not my laugh, but it is very much like the movie.
Yeah.
Sometimes these jokes get a laugh.
Yeah.
Roy and Ish try to run out on Claudia, but she's one step ahead of them. Then we get this fight in the parking lot, which goes on too long.
No, nope, hilarious.
It's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen
in
brilliant.
My life. I just think I would have been happy just seeing her beat the shit out of him. I didn't need to see him getting a few punches in on her.
Well, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it's funny when he throws her onto the bonnet of the car. It's just because it goes into the realms of ridiculous.
Yeah, but also because her evil boyfriend is supposed to have hit her
exactly.
And then she's in the car and she's like, I won't stand for that. And you're like, well, fair enough, Claudia, whatever. But then Roy Munson punches her. So is he bad now in the logic of the film?
He doesn't want to, though, but she goes for him
right,
first.
Fine. So then are you in territory of, well, did you have was it a violent relationship with your evil boyfriend on both sides? And then you're adding complexity to this film, which it doesn't call for.
You're in the territory of about 20 minutes ago, we had a bull semen joke.
Yeah,
it's a Farrelly Brothers movie. I really wouldn't think about it.
I think they did that joke much better in Dumb and Dumber when they're having the play fight in the snow and it's all lovely. And then one of her snowballs gently hits him in the face and he just loses his shit and he throws it. And then you realise he's a foot away from her. That's it. That's your joke. Been and gone.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not even the funniest thing in that fight scene. The funniest thing is where Woody Harrelson's trying to get Ishmael into the car without alerting Claudia.
Mm.
And he's like, yeah, a military train derailed. This whole area is in danger of being contaminated by a huge cloud of... And then he sees Claudia in the car and goes, shit. And Ishmael goes, a huge cloud of shit?
Gets a laugh.
Yeah, it does. Keep going.
All right.
While they're fighting, Ishmael disappears. And that's our all is lost moment. Roy heads home.
I hope he doesn't get Munson.
We're trying to give the film some heart here. His family business is gone. His dad has died 10 years previous. And so him and Claudia decide to team up. They search for Ishmael and they find him stripping in a scene. Isn't that funny? Yeah. Although Alex is probably going to do a line from it.
I agree. That scene's not that funny.
They all reteam. We get a driving montage and then we're into Reno and the home stretch.
What do you think about New Beginnings? What, the feminine hygiene spray?
That doesn't even make any sense. What does that mean? If you had a fanny spray, you'd start again? What does it mean?
Works for me.
It doesn't work. What do you think about fresh down there? What do you think about...
But that doesn't work for her line.
No, but who thinks that a spray is called new...
I do.
You don't.
I immediately went, that sounds like a feminine hygiene spray.
I don't think you did. What is a feminine hygiene spray?
That I don't know.
I don't know.
therefore,
you should. You really should.
Chris, what a way to tell me.
Chris and I had a meeting at the end of last year.
Is it the aircon in here?
She needs some new beginnings.
Yeah. It just, yeah. I'm aware of it. I'm working on it.
So in Reno, Roy is reunited with Big Ern, who used to date Claudia.
Yeah.
Didn't see that coming. Ishmael breaks his hand trying to punch Big Ern.
It's a small world when you've got fantastic tits.
Is that what they said?
That's what Big Ern says to Claudia.
Oh, really? I missed that.
Mm. Stan reappears and Claudia leaves with him and the money they've saved.
Which it's supposed to be like, she hasn't really. Oh, she fucking has.
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I hadn't seen this for 20 years.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, she's pulling
it's all
horse.
A trick.
No,
yeah.
No,
she's just fucked off. What a slag.
Stop being such a whore.
Yeah.
Chris Elliott makes an indecent proposal.
Still works. That joke still works.
He offers $1 million to sleep with Ishmael. Cut to Roy celebrating with the money while Ishmael slumped over the bed with a bottle in his hand. I'd forgotten this was a dream. I actually thought in my head when this starts up, I thought, oh God, I can't believe they actually did this. Yeah. But it's good because it's Woody was in Indecent Proposal, so it works on many levels.
There's some I'd say this final tournament, it becomes quite dramatic. Like, they do put the jokes to one side for a moment. Like, the bit where Woody, Roy is throwing up in the toilet and yeah. Ishmael's like, you drunk? And he's like, I don't throw up when I drink, I throw up when I don't. And you're like, oof, that's quite a fucking raw line.
Yeah. Mm.
We also, just before the final game starts, we see the Ernie advert. Him sponsoring fatherless families with hot mums.
It is funny.
Sometimes when I wake up in the morning, Mr. McCracken's already there.
You see, you should do it more. It's so much fun.
It's because this got said a lot when I was at uni as well. That line. And the way he says this, I discovered if you give a little, you get back a whole lot more.
It is funny.
And so we are into the bowling montage. The Cinderella story starts here,
yeah.
Of course. Hey, Bill Murray, lovely. Line from Caddyshack.
Lovely.
They both start winning. They're on a collision course to both make it to the final. Ernie's dressed like a cowboy for the climactic match. He pulls out a ball with the rose in it. He's milking every second of it. His I called it Trumpian hair, gets crazier and crazier. And Peter Farrelly said, when Bill showed up on the set, he said, hey, I have an idea. I thought the guy would start with a big afro and then he's bald when we see him 17 years later. And we said, well, actually, Bill, we already did that for Woody. He's got long blonde hair and later on he's going bald. And Bill goes, yeah, so it'll be both of us.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, but they said when we saw him and he came in, you know, we were like, how could we not let him do that? So he's going all out to wind Roy up. Roy does start making mistakes. Roy ends up with a 7-10 split, Alex.
Mm.
That's not good.
I know it's not good. I've got that.
Yep.
On the Wii, in real life.
Virtually impossible to convert.
Not on the Wii.
But Roy nails it. Now Ernie needs 3 strikes. He hits the first, he hits the second, and he hits the third. Apparently Bill Murray genuinely got that turkey.
Yeah, isn't it weird though that in a sports movie, it's not your hero bowling to win, it's the antagonist bowling to win.
I was surprised.
It's strange, isn't it?
I'd forgotten this ending. Yeah. I'm waiting for
and
it.
And also because when he needs to do the 7-10 split and Ish has gone, but it doesn't make any difference because then it's not like he's got to do the 7-10 split and his buddy is fucked off. It's like he's done now, he's just going to sit down. It's so strange to do it like that.
I have an explanation for it, but just before then, we've got the turkey, the place goes nuts, Bill Murray's rolling around the floor, he takes Roy's hand and throws it in the crowd. And then Peter Farrelly said, at the very end, after Big Earn wins, there was no dialogue. He just wins and he's supposed to celebrate, but we kept the camera on him. On the day, Bill starts saying, I can't believe it, I'm above the law. Big Earn can do anything and we'll get away with it. That shit was like gold and it was all unscripted. Big Earn is above the law. So Roy's been munsoned again. I wasn't expecting it. So he goes back home, he's drinking. Claudia appears at his door with the money.
He's not drinking, he's pouring the booze away.
Okay, yeah. He's pouring the booze away. Sorry, he's drinking something
cleaned
else.
Up.
She's got the money. She apparently went with Stan to protect them. It's a bit
bullshit.
Confusing. It's a bit all over the place.
Playing both sides, clearly.
And then they bet the money, she or he bet the money on Big Earn, so they doubled their money. But I'm ready to start betting on you, Roy. And we find out that he's Rubber Man now, getting $500,000 to advertise Trojan condoms.
Just the amount they need to save the Amish farm.
Perfect.
So this is what changed from that original script. Peter Farrelly said the ending was one of the big changes. We didn't like the original ending. Woody loses the big tournament, but goes to the casino and puts a quarter in and wins $1 million, which just seemed like you might as well have a UFO come down and drop off some cash. It was too easy. We knew the audience was thinking he's going to win the big thing, and we didn't want that to happen. We wanted him to lose. It wasn't about the victory in a bowling tournament. It was a bigger thing. So then we added all the things where he gets endorsed by Trojan just so he'll be able to help out with Ishmael's family.
And as Bobby puts it, we saw it more as a redemption story where Roy Monson didn't have to win the bowling tournament. So we tweaked it. It was more about Roy winning back his own self-esteem. That was the victory he got.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's in there.
It's good. I had to look at what Vassar College was. You know, when he goes, I've also got to do an orientation talk at Vassar College. You know what Vassar College is?
Vassar is an Ivy League university, isn't it?
It was an all-female college for a very long time. Yeah. And I've heard it before in movies and I've never bothered to look it up.
Like a Vassar girl.
Right. Yeah. But apparently it's been the butt of jokes because it's an all-female for a very, very long time. I'll read you this article. Vassar has become a thing to poke fun at. The girls are ridiculed, exaggerated, falsified, and the very name of Vassar is synonymous for feminine foolishness. The consequence is that girls are beginning to dislike to go there. And that is from 1885. Genuinely.
Oh, God. Hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah. I know, I couldn't believe
it. Why did you read that out, Alex?
Because I couldn't believe I found an article from 1885 on the internet about Vassar College being the butt of jokes.
Ishmael's victory as well is that he's helped Roy to give up the late nights and the lying and the gambling, and he even got Claudia to quit being so much of a whore.
Yeah, great.
It's funny.
It's not.
It is.
It's not.
So they
bye whore.
Not funny. Just making old people swear. It's not that. Well, no, that can be funny, but
oh, I don't think it's that. I think it's set up like, you know, it's just going to be nice. Oh, it's not nice.
Yeah.
They say their farewells. Claudia gives Ray the watch from his dad. I feel like there's more innings in the Return of the King here. We get a lot of climaxes.
Yeah.
Too many. Blues Traveller starts singing, and then did you see the post-credit scene?
It's just someone playing in the band, isn't it?
Yeah. No. The post-credit scene.
I watched the whole fucking thing because I felt like there should be a post-credit scene with Big Earn.
No. It's an outtake, actually. They obviously said to Lynn Shay, how long can you do the licky thing with your tongue? And she does it for quite a long time.
Yeah.
I saw that. That is the post-credit scene. So, Bobby Farrelly quoted here, Kingpin opened the very week of the Summer Olympics in Atlanta and there was the bomb that went off. All sorts of things happened that kept people out of the movie theatre. Also, the studio refused to do adverts during the Olympics for the film. They said, that's not your crowd. I said, what? The world is not our crowd? They said, no, you're going to do it on bowling and that's that. So they offered to give them adverts on bowling because they said bowling is the most popular sport on television, to which Peter Farrelly said, that's a bunch of bullshit, which I think is true. But the film became a hit on video, having failed in the cinema, and a bigwig at Fox Studios called them to say he thought the film was hysterical. He said, I want to let you know, if you made that movie at Fox, that would have been a smash hit. I want you to make your next film here for us. Have you got anything? And we just happened to be circling. There's something about Mary. We said, well, that's what we're looking at right now. And he looked at it and said, let's do it. He saved us because honestly, we were afraid we might be done. So the only other thing I've got here is the sequel talk.
Mm.
So in 2016, Bobby Farrelly said the idea would be later on in life, we thought that Kingpin would be fun to revisit. We never really gave it much serious thought, but we thought about Ernie McCracken. I'd love to see what Ernie McCracken is doing nowadays. It's going to be something interesting. He's just that guy. You could do just a story on him. Just follow him on a different adventure. By now, he'd probably be in politics. And then in June 2021, they announced it's happening. Mm-hmm. So we don't know in what context, whether it will be an Ernie McCracken film, but the Farrellys are making a sequel.
Both of them. Are they directing? I don't think they're directing. Did I read
No, they're making it. I don't know if they're producing. It might be someone else directing.
I can't imagine Peter Farrelly's going to be directing that after winning Best Picture.
No, he's doing a comedy now, isn't he?
Is he?
I think he's back to doing a comedy.
Okay.
So that's it. Any more?
No.
Shall we do the conundrums then?
Oh, really? Is that a thing? Was that last week
that
as well?
That was last week.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
No, that's new this week.
All right, sure. Let's do the conundrums.
Victoria, what was your favourite scene?
I mean, you both agreed that it was the funniest scene in the film, but it's where Ishmael is stripping in a club. Look at your face. I thought it was brilliant. Honestly,
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. Because I wasn't expecting it. I wanted this film to be more about watching an Amish man who's on like Rumspringa or whatever, like lose his weight, which I don't think it is enough. Mm. And then it just came out of nowhere. He looks amazing as a dancer. I like it. Woke me up a bit. I liked it.
I agree that they don't plough that enough, the Amish man. yeah. sort of in the world. It's sort of, which is why I think very right back at the start, I was like, I'm not massively into Randy Quaid in this role, and it's not his fault. It's because he's not really given much to do.
Alex.
It's the diner scene where Big Earn and Roy have a conversation at the start, because it's just so brilliantly done. Earn trying to con Roy with his silver tongue into taking these hustles before realizing that Roy is just too stupid, and the simultaneously Roy eating the food. And that line that you mentioned where he actually says, why don't you go and eat that outside and then come back in? Brilliant. It's that scene.
Mine is when you give a little, you get back a whole lot more. Alex, who's your MVW?
Most
valuable, whatever. Sorry,
it has to be Bill Murray. Like, it is Bill Murray. We covered him at the start. Like, the lines that he delivers, anyone else delivering would be awful. The fact that he creates an actual three-dimensional character from Big Earn, which by the Farrelly's own admission on the page wasn't that, is tremendous. To the point that despite how abominable a person he is, when he wins the match at the end, you almost go, I'm sort of glad he did.
Yeah, he deserves to be above the law.
But it is that thing, you sort of go, he's got nothing. It would destroy him if he didn't win this match. So I'm actually sort of, I have a little bit of empathy for like him being, you know, the victor. So it's Bill Murray for a billion reasons and more.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same. I think it's his funniest performance, actually, even though he's not in the film a lot. I think this is his funniest. And as you said, I didn't realise quite how much he'd written himself. So for those reasons, I'm going for Bill. Vicky.
I would have done, but I don't think he's in it enough. But that's probably a good thing, because it would tip the balance too far his way.
And then Harrelson.
Yeah, so Woody Harrelson, because he seems like a real person. So this, you know, getting Munson thing seems like a real thing. And without any disrespect, seeming like a real person in this film is quite an achievement, I think. And when he's bowling in the final and Ernie tricks him and puts the fake proposal on the screen from Claudia that says, I made a mistake, let's get married. Mm. Woody Harrelson's face, that's like, that was incredible. Like, you really felt that, which is mad in a film like this. So Woody Harrelson, because of that hangdog thing he's got, like...
And it's interesting where this film appears on his trajectory, because at the time we're still thinking maybe he's just this comedy guy, this dopey comedy guy. And so you're right, you're seeing glimpses at what he's going to become, because his career is unbelievable when you think of all the great performances he's given, and he started out as that bloke on Cheers.
Yeah.
He's one of the most brilliant actors, I think, in Hollywood.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think this movie is helped a huge amount by him, which is why I said it, which is why I'm glad you picked him, because I think in lesser hands, and if it was played less dramatically and more for laughs, if it was just a straight-up comedian in that role, then you'd be like, this is just such a superficial bit of fluff movie. But he does, especially in that final third, add some real dramatic heft to this film.
Yeah.
Vicky, would you change anything?
I would change just one thing. It's a script geek thing, so, you know, don't be scared. The act two low point is not very good. So a fight in a car park, and then Ish's low point, which is like, you two are fighting over me, so I'm going to leave. That's bullshit. So what it should be is, when Roy initially recruited Ish to win the money, he should have lied about the amount of money because he thinks an Amish person doesn't need money. Then over the course of act two, they grow closer and Ish starts to teach Roy a few things about value and real meaning and blah, 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 blah. Then Ish finds out the real amount of money and he needs it for his family. And then that's why he takes off, because he's been lied to the whole time. Then they reconnect, whatever, whatever. So that's all sitting in front of you. Mm. That's what should happen.
Alex? As I said earlier, not a fan of the Lin Shaye sex sequence. It's a bit grim, bit grubby for my taste. So I'd probably just excise that. Other than that, it's a perfect film.
Otherwise, because it would be funnier if he just enjoyed it despite himself. Like, he's literally throwing up.
Yeah.
That's bad. Mm. So he could be like, you can still have the gross at moment. You can still be like, oh, aren't varicose veins horrific or whatever. But if he secretly quite liked it, they're fine.
It feels out of place with the rest of the movie, which sounds weird when you've got him drinking bull semen 10 minutes later, but it just does. It doesn't fly like the rest of it flies.
You've changed.
I know.
And I wouldn't want to lose Lin Shaye's performance.
Okay.
My change. Well, that advert is by far the funniest moment in the film. Ernie's the best character,
like he's at the start and at the end, I think you should have adverts popping up all throughout the movie. Wherever Roy is, Ernie's on the telly in the background and he could be helping out homeless teenage girls or sponsoring female athletes
this is good.
Or female dancers. So it could be a running joke, but it's also sort of haunting Roy. It's always there in the background. And it'll make you feel like he's in the film the whole way through, even if he isn't.
Love that.
That's brilliant.
Great change. Great change.
Love more.
Right, we done then?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm assuming you didn't do a quiz last week.
No, we did not do one in your absence.
Okay.
So I get the point automatically just for showing up, I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to dredge up the whole Twitter storm that was created towards the end of last year.
Oh, really?
Year, but, there were a lot of raised eyebrows about the
on really Twitter.
There really was.
Oh, there were.
There really was.
Some people were up in arms.
I want my trophy back.
I'm not talking to you.
I mean, someone actually went through every single show and wrote down how many I won versus how many you won.
Have you written it down? Have you written it down?
No, because I don't want to. I said I didn't want to dredge this up. I'm just reminding you.
What are you doing now?
I'm reminding you that the quiz this year
reminding is
should
dredging.
Be taken seriously.
The quiz, you remember, that was your idea, Chris, originally. Did you think it would? This is where we'd end up?
No, I've been genuinely surprised at Alex.
About what he knows?
No.
There you go. That's good.
More about his behaviour.
Really?
Yeah, because it is supposed to be just a bit of fun. And he turned quite weird in December.
It was a bit of fun. It was a bit of fun until you basically made up new rules at the end. At the end of the year. Just new rules. Brand new rules. Like, oh yeah, it's going to be based on who wins the most quizzes. Oh, it isn't anymore. It's something different. What's this?
What's that?
I got given movie challenge quiz box.
Oh, okay.
At Christmas.
Really? That's what it's called? Movie challenge quiz box?
Do you work in marketing, Alex? Just let the experts do what they do.
I got given movie challenge quiz box for Christmas. Do you want one too? Of course you do.
So
you're not writing your own bloody questions?
Well, it's a lot of work. Let's see if this goes anywhere. There's also some of the questions are charades. And I'm wondering how that'll work on a podcast.
I think really well.
So I've got that. If it goes to a tiebreaker, we will be playing a game of charades.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But let's do the trivia. You ready?
We don't want listeners.
Who played Edna Turnblad, the mother of Tracy Turnblad, in the 2007 musical movie Hairspray?
John Travolta.
No. Is it? No.
Yes, it is. Oh, you can keep saying no.
I was thinking of Michael Ball.
it's not John Travolta.
No, it's...
It was Michael Ball's big Hollywood break.
Yep.
Bless him. actually, I really like Michael Ball. That was really unfair.
What? Saying that he didn't get his big break in Hairspray was unfair.
Yeah.
It's just a fact.
But he was in Hairspray.
He was in Hairspray.
Not in that one.
Not in that movie, and it wasn't his. But these are just facts. I don't think Michael Ball's going, how fucking dare you, Christopher?
Actually, bonus point. Do you know who played that character in the John Waters original?
No.
No.
Divine.
Oh.
Big Divine fact. Right. Tallulah, Fat Sam, and Blousy
Boxy
Brown.
Boxy Brown. Fuck off!
Point to Alex. A point to Alex. Come on, Vicky. I want to do this charade. Which
charade or charade?
Charade. I wasn't sure. I've said it both ways.
I think it's charade.
Yeah.
Which actor sang Singing in the Rain?
Gene Kelly.
Correct.
What can I do? I know that.
Well, you have to say it then.
Say it. That's what you can do. You say it out loud.
You've not understood the quiz.
Don't just think Gene Kelly.
Oh, tough one. In the Hunger Games movie, which district is Katniss Everdeen from?
12.
Vicky got it! I don't think I would have known that one. Who played the Bond girl in Die Another Day? I should say
Madonna.
I should say the one in the orange bikini.
Oh, okay. Ursula Andress.
Halle Berry.
Ursula Andress.
Ursula Andress.
No, she wasn't
Halle
in Die
Berry.
Another Day.
No.
Halle Berry.
It's Halle Berry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Although
Ursula Andress was a bit before.
She could have been, though. There's nothing wrong with that. She wanted to be.
And finally, name Hugh Grant's character in Bridget Jones' Diary.
Oh, fuck. He's called...
Jack.
No. Oh, he's evil. Is it Charlie?
Hugh. I think he's called Hugh.
No. You're going to kick yourself.
I know.
I don't think I would have known this.
David. Mark. It's Mark something.
His initials are DC.
David Charlie. David Coulthard.
Daniel Cleaver.
Oh, yeah. That's a name.
All right. Well, the charades will just have to wait for another week because Alex has won that 4-1.
And we'd love to say a big thank you right now to the makers of Movie Challenge Quiz Box for those questions. You can find them online. Just Google Movie Challenge Quiz Box. Excellent work. All right. Next week, Clash Butters in Control continues another listener pairing. Chris, I believe you have the clue. Bowl it, mushy, bowl it.
No, I am doing.
Bowl it, mush, bowl it. That should be the clue.
Thank you. You did it really well. That's what it sounded like when Mark did it.
It makes Mark sound like a psychopath, is what it makes. He walks around the flat murmuring to himself, bowl it, mushy, bowl it.
I know you make it sound just like grubby and dirty, something else.
Really? Because I'm not the one who said I went down a Golden Girls hole this week.
Which one? We all know.
It doesn't need to be said.
Clue. Musical clues this week. I'm giving you musical clues. I'll be singing in the pub in a bit on video, which will go on Twitter. But the clue here right now is Gangsters from Paradise.
Oh, Gangsters from Paradise is your clue. All right, lovely stuff. That's your first clue for next week's pairing as Clash Brothers in Control continues. In the meantime, please subscribe, rate, and indeed review us if you have the time. It's a great help, and please check in with us on Twitter and Instagram at ClashPod. Back on Thursday, talking the Big Lebowski. Bye-bye.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.